Showtime. The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Churiel hits it on the ground. It's a fair ball down the left field line. Churiel around first. He's headed for second. Here's a throw from Happ. It is late. A leadoff double for Jackson Churiel. Drops down. A line drive down the right field line. That'll score Churiel. Terang into second base. Back-to-back doubles. And we're tied 1-1. Perkins line drive back up the middle of base hit. Vaughn will score. Frelick goes to third. It's 4-1. 10th man at the plate. Churiel down in the count 1-2. Soroka's pitch. Line drive and into left, a base hit. Frelick scores. Perkins coming home. He scores. A sixth spot at the bottom of the first for the Brew Crew. The pitch. Struck him out swinging for a fastball by him at 96, and he strikes out three in the inning. 9 Ks in the game for Freddy Peralta through 5 sparkling innings in Game 1.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Shimura. Here's Jen Latta.
And Cubs game 2 tonight at AmFam Field. It's an 8:08 first pitch, and it has been announced that Aaron Ashby will be the opener for game 2 after the Cubs really just absolutely stomped on the Cubs 9-3 over the weekend on Saturday. We talked about Jackson Churiel's injury. If you missed any of that, you can find it on Wisconsin On Demand, our all-new ESPN Wisconsin app, wherever you listen to your podcasts, etc. But I want to talk about this Ashby decision for a minute, because again, I continue to default to, and I think this is how it should be, the reigning National League Manager of the Year, Pat Murphy, who has a good chance to do that again, to win it again. I default to, well, Murph makes a lot of good decisions, you know? And so if this is the way that they want to go, where they want to have an opener for game 2 of the postseason at home and then follow that up with Quinn Priester, we assume, I want to trust Pat Murphy's decision. The flip side of that, of course, is I think Craig Counsell probably thought he was doing the right thing by throwing his guy out there on Saturday, and it was on short rest, and it's a guy who doesn't necessarily do well against the Brewers, and he made a managerial decision, and then whoopsie poopsie, that was not the right decision, obviously, as the Brewers
he stood by it, though.
As
it
the
was
Brewers
fantastic.
Tapped 6 on him right away. So there's a part of me that's like, best intentions and all, I'm a little bit nervous about the opener in game 2 of the NLDS game.
Why?
I've been trying to figure this out, honestly. Because again, my brain, default to Pat Murphy. Mm-hmm. Pat Murphy knows what he's doing. He has obviously managed this team to the best record in baseball this season. Jen, you should give him the benefit of the doubt. Because you just don't see it that often. Like, in game 2 of the NLDS, with the Brewers coming off of all of that rest, you would theoretically have your full arsenal of healthy pitchers. Mm-hmm. And so the part of me that is like, I think I would rather see Quinn Priester go out there and start the game. We have seen Quinn Priester start games during the regular season. I recognize he's never pitched in the postseason.
There we go.
Yep. But there's a part of me that still likes the tradition, the normalcy, the routine that we see from baseball, and this kind of going against it makes me a smidge nervous. Not overly nervous. I'm not panicking, but there's a part of me that's like, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel here?
Because this is something the Brewers used. It wasn't necessarily, only one time with Ashby, but they used an opener a lot earlier this season with guys like Chad Patrick, and would try to pair them up to try to cobble together enough starts. And the Brewers starting pitching is beat up right now. I think it's a specific Cubs thing. And Quinn Priester loves to throw the sinker. He is a ground ball guy. Whether we're listening to Jeff Levering, whoever associated with the Brewers, he throws sinkers. Cubs hit the sinker pretty well. So I think he's going to have to modify his game plan in terms of what he throws. Still going to throw a ton of sinkers, but I think the Cubs pretty good at that. And you look at the majority of the best hitters for the Cubs being left-handed. And just forcing them to make a decision early in the game of, okay, how do we want to manage this lineup? Because Craig knows that Ashby's not going to be throwing 5 innings. He knows it's an inning or two. At best case scenario for the Brewers, it's three. You know, he just pitches three, one, two, three innings, gets in there, gets out, faces the lineup one time, and then he's gone. I think best case scenario is he goes two innings. But now you've got to make a decision with your lineup. Do you want your lefties where you typically have them, where you had them in game one, batting three, PCA's down there in the seven spot? Do you want to bury Michael Bush and Kyle Tucker a little bit to try to avoid that? And then they don't get as many at-bats, and that can be advantageous for the Brewers, who have some pretty good righties coming out of the bullpen later in the game. It's just one chess move early in the game where now Craig has to make a decision. Does he counter? Does he not? And then, after the game settled in a little bit, you can have Quinn Priester go out there and throw his four-ish five innings that you can expect out of him, and then hopefully turn it over to the rest of the bullpen.
So let's talk about it here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It's sponsored by BetterHelp. Mental health is help. Visit BetterHelp.com/timeout for 10% off your first month of therapy. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. Chew, where do you stand on this?
Well, I was going to ask Gabe, did they take into consideration at all that Priester is a rookie and he would feel probably more comfortable pitching at home than going into the first game on the road in Chicago where you anticipate it's going to be crazy?
100%, Chu. I think 100%, which is why I think Jose Quintana is getting the start in game three.
Really?
He's the start. Well, he's the veteran. He's pitched, he pitched for the Cubs, so he's more comfortable pitching off of that mound.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think Quintana is going to be the game three starter just because he is the vet. And that's what you signed this guy for, to bring in so he can kind of log some innings in the postseason. And that's why I think Priester, despite Murph going, because nobody believes Murph when he goes, I honestly have no idea who's going to be throwing after Aaron Ashby. Yes, I'm sure you have no plan for what you want this game to look like, Murph. I'm sure that's the case. But that's why I think it is going to be Priester. And like the emotions are just so high to start those first two innings. It felt like the crowd even ran out of gas a little bit by the time the third or fourth inning rolled around on Saturday, because it was just so euphoric, scoring six runs, scoring three runs, and then kind of throwing it into cruise control. I think even with all of that energy, my guess is with Priester, okay, yeah, you're a starter, but you can still get your routine in. You're going to be going in a clean inning. It's not like they're going to bring him in with two outs in the second inning. My guess is they've got a plan for him to start inning number three. It's going to be a clean inning. It'll be just like a start, but the emotions will be down, and then you'll be able to go into cruise control, just trying to set up the rookie who hasn't made a postseason appearance, try to set him up for success as much as possible.
Okay. I get it. Because in baseball, the regular season home away really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to the playoffs, man, it's just different. In football, it really doesn't. You go play Dallas regular season, it's not much difference in the crowd during the playoffs. But I could see it in baseball.
Well, it's because, Chewy,
I kind of understand.
Because every
now.
Play in the regular season is still so important when your guys are out there.
Yeah.
Every pitch in the regular season, it's, but you know, you're just kind of, you're there and you're paying attention. But every pitch in the postseason just means so damn much, and everybody is just locked into the game. So I completely understand where Murph is coming from this. I think he's trying to set up Quinn Priester for the most success he could possibly have.
And you think that the nerves and the all of the elements that might contribute to a performance, right? You want to hope that you can go out there and you can block out all the noise and all of that stuff, but it is still a playoff game. It is still a big deal. You think that Ashby going out there, and again, I want to make sure that we are very clear on this. I think having Ashby is such a luxury. Again, we have talked about all the things that he has been able to do for the Brewers, you know, long relief, and he has saves, and he has starts, and all, like, he's able to do pretty much anything you throw at him. I love that they have him on the roster, but there's a part of me also that is like, he only has one start this season. Just the one.
Yeah, but it's not like he's starting. For him, it's like starting a clean inning. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just going out there.
Is that what I'm asking? Isn't that comparable?
Yeah, I think it's just starting a clean inning. I mean, the energy is high, but if he were to come into a postseason game in the seventh or eighth inning, it's a clean inning, it's a tight game, some other high leverage spots they would use him in, I think the energy would be
similar.
Pretty similar. So, because Ashby's been around for a little bit at this point, too, they've thrown him in so many different situations. He's just comfortable no matter where you put him.
Where are we at with Woodruff?
So he obviously is not on the NLDS roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he couldn't pitch, but he left the door open should the Brewers advance. Don't know how far they would have to advance, Chew. That was still kind of ambiguous. But there's a chance he could pitch later this postseason the further the Brewers move on.
Okay.
Were you surprised Hoskins wasn't on the postseason roster?
Not even a little bit. Well, they telegraphed that. They kept him in the minors for as long as they possibly could. And then they, when they called him up, he got one start. He got one start as a DH and 10 at-bats. They made it pretty obvious what their plan at first base was, and that was going to be a combination of Andrew Vaughn and Jake Bowers. And they both play defense better than Hoskin does. And Bowers is left-handed, so you have that pinch hit option off the bench. And Bowers can also play the outfield. So if this Jackson Chourio injury continues to linger, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he gets a start in left field if they're facing a right-handed pitcher and they want that bat in
the
lineup.
Did you see the other thing that happened over the weekend, Shu? And I don't know if a lot of people paid attention to this, but Adam McAlvey did write about it. I guess Pat Murphy doesn't shake hands with the guys on the line during intros. He just kind of mean mugs them.
Yeah.
Why? Mm-hmm. Germs?
No, because he thinks it's too much. Like, he gives them high fives and handshakes or whatever before the game starts anyway. He doesn't, I believe he called it happy horse bleep.
That's okay. Correct.
Happy horse bleep is what he calls it. So he doesn't want to necessarily participate in the happy horse bleep. But some guys knew, other guys didn't. So, like, Andrew Vaughn went up and just got ignored when they did the because in the first game of the series, they announced the lineups, yeah, and everybody goes out to the foul, yeah, line, you know, so Murph is already out there, and Andrew Vaughn went to get a handshake, and Murph just, yeah, left him hang.
The handshake takes too long, you know, and that's in that instance, it just takes
too long.
They're
saving a lot of time by collectively not shaking hands.
Yeah, you just do the pump, the fist, yeah.
No, he doesn't do anything.
Just do that.
He just, like, stares
if you, put up a fit, like, you're just going to punch him in the chest.
Yeah. He pretends they're not there. He just keeps staring forward.
Really?
It's like a keep it moving, pal.
Yeah. He's got a little grin on his face, too, as he does it.
And you think that's a strategy as well?
I mean, it's part of, I don't know if it's a strategy, it's a part of Murph, who Murph is, because it's apparently what
he's
always done.
A little odd duck. He's a little odd. It's fine.
It's, what was the thing earlier this year we learned about?
Pancakes.
No.
Yes, but no.
Where if somebody's, like, getting too full of themselves.
Oh, the checkmark system.
Checkmark. Oh. Yeah. That feels to align with that this sort of motto.
Because, you know, you throw a couple high fives and you're starting feeling yourself. Right?
I don't know. I mean, because the checkmark thing is, like, to avoid people getting a little too look at me. I feel this is a checkmark thing. Because now it's a story and it's kind of look at me. I don't do this. I think that could be a checkmark.
Yeah, but the bar's so low. That's the weird thing.
What do you mean?
It's like you do the minorest thing, and he'll give you a check mark.
Yeah,
like,
self-raised think PU, Chew.
Well, I have a little different scale, right? I mean, you let the guys have a little bit, but he's a tough grader, you know? I'm a big curve guy. I'm a big grade on the curve.
We know.
How you got 3 and C from what I hear.
The sliding scale of expectations.
Right in the meaty part of the curve. Not falling behind, not showing off.
C's get degrees, all right? Even D's get degrees, so there you go.
The problem is, it's not like you can adopt this Murphy thing. It's not like you can go to the game, and if people, like, are high-fiving each other because you're excited, you can, like, mean mug them, and it'll be understood, right? No, I'm just honoring Murph. You know, Murph, he doesn't, you know, give the guys high fives. He doesn't knock them up. He just kind of stares them down. I'm doing the Murph thing. I think it'd get me in a fight.
Oh, yeah. And there were a couple of them that broke out in the game, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, I know I did see one Cubs fan get was being arrested and being escorted out. Yeah, got into a fight late in the game.
I don't want, like, there was implication that someone hit a child.
That was the implication. There was no video.
I did not see proof of it.
There was no video to accompany the claim, so I didn't want to necessarily say that. But the video clearly showed the guy being arrested and escorted off.
Were there any the Bears still suck chants?
No.
Funnily enough, I saw a, you know, the walk down, like, tunnel area that the Brewers have. They were chanting, "Go Brewers," instead of "The Bears
what
still
a
suck."
Concept.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. What a concept. Wow.
I did hear a "Let's Go Brewers" as I was in the stairwell, walking down out of the game.
I believe that's what it was. I saw the video of it.
As opposed to crossing the streams and, you know, criticizing or booing or whatever it is, the football team.
No.
Because it turns out when my baseball team wins, I'm excited about my baseball team winning. And I want to celebrate my baseball team winning. I guess we're just strange up here. We're just weird. We're different.
You think the game time tonight affects the crowd? Is it a sellout?
Well, yeah. The game's been sold out for how long?
So you think a lot of Brewers fans? You think it'll be? What would you say the percentage was when you were there on Saturday night?
10.
10% Cubs fans?
Yeah.
90-10?
Yeah. You think easily,
same
easily
tonight,
90-10.
Or you think a little swing a little bit more?
Probably a little bit more, because, I mean, are Cubs fans going to come up here for an 8 o'clock game? When ticket prices are what they are?
Yes. But I don't know what the percentage will be. And I don't know how many Brewers fans have given them the opportunity to buy the tickets.
I mean, so I've just been kind of monitoring, just out of curiosity. So if I pull up the Vivid Seats app, like I think I saw on that app there were only like 500 tickets available on Saturday. Right now there's only 459 listings on Vivid Seats for tickets. Like people are holding on. People want to go to the games themselves.
Well, Gabe,
so they're not even putting it out.
What's unacceptable? If you said 10% is acceptable, what's unacceptable? 15, 20?
Yeah, I guess it just, yeah, if it got to 25%.
But oh, then just, yeah, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. Because but people just are holding on to their tickets. They don't want to sell them. They just want to hold on to them.
Why? This could be history.
Exactly. And that's great. That's why you buy the postseason tickets. The reason why you bought postseason tickets when you did. And Jen mentioned we got a special presale code for being partners of the Brewers with WTMJ. When I bought my tickets, it was slim pickings, and that was even before it opened to the general public.
Yes.
So people who have season tickets, have purchased season tickets for next year, who have that early access, they're grabbing a lot of these tickets because they just want to go. They want a way to go to these games because this team, again, is just different than some of the other teams we've seen for the Brewers.
Take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Roll on. Don't forget, we've got Rob Domofsky coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk a little Packers. Stick around.
When we talk about the Brewers, it's always brought to you by our friends at Neurospine Center of Wisconsin. Don't risk it. Go where the pros go. Professional athletes trust Neurospine Center of Wisconsin, and you can too. Professional athletes like Christian Yelich trust Neurospine Center of Wisconsin, where surgeon Dr. Brandon Rebholz is to thank for helping get Milwaukee's MVP back in the field for a stellar season. So shout out to our friends at Neurospine Center of Wisconsin.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
What we need is a chart. Mm-hmm. And every week, we take the shirtless picture of Chew, and we move that to wherever the prediction is of how many wins that they
six,
have.
Six.
Eight.
Eight. Six.
Seven.
Seven. I think that's how it goes now, right?
Eight, and they six, lost. 75309
on 94.5 ESPN.
Josh DiMaggio here from my friends at Wanna Parlay, my favorite daily fantasy sports app with the absolute largest payouts on parlays. The football season is here, and it is time to play. I'm looking at a little Monday night action with the Isaiah Pacheco under on rushing yards, Brian Thomas Jr. over receiving yards, Kareem Hunt under his receiving yards, and Breshad Smith to score a touchdown. Here's what you should do. Download the Wanna Parlay app, click around, and when you decide to upload money to play and get into the action, use promo code JGC for a 100% deposit match for up to $250. Download the Wanna Parlay app, use promo code JGC, and let's play the world's richest parlay today. You must be 18 years or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER today.
Before we get to Rob Domofsky in just a few moments, Chewy, you were miffed by this Mark Sanchez story that rolled out over the weekend, huh?
Yeah.
Very bizarre stuff.
Because it broke, and they're saying that he got stabbed and stuff, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And then maybe a couple hours later, maybe not even a couple hours, I see that he was under investigation and going to be arrested.
That's correct. He got discharged from the hospital and was immediately placed into custody and booked on three misdemeanor charges.
So I think the lesson go ahead, Chu.
What went down? I mean, well, they really didn't.
It's all alleged right now,
reports,
but there is,
it was just,
yeah, there is a charge happening that seemed like, I believe Mark Sanchez and this guy got into a dispute. It ended physically, and it seems like the aggressor is being charged as Mark Sanchez because after he was maced, it did not slow him down enough.
So he was booked on three misdemeanor charges, battery with injury, public intoxication, and unlawful entry of a vehicle. He has an initial hearing scheduled for Tuesday morning, posted $300 cash bond to get released. Based on the probable cause affidavit, Sanchez allegedly aggressed on a 69-year-old man doing his job disposing of restaurant grease into a truck. The man initially pepper sprayed Sanchez, and when the Fox Sports analyst continued to advance, the man stabbed him with a knife multiple times. The truck driver has not been charged with any crime.
So what was so interesting about the way that this all rolled out this weekend was that initially it was posted by big platforms, big people, that Mark Sanchez was the victim of a robbery and had been stabbed. And it was like, pray for the Fox broadcaster. Pray for him. He's in town. He's supposed to cover the, supposed to call the Colts game, and he's in Indianapolis, probably just went out for the evening, and oh my goodness, he's the victim of bop, 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 bop. And then as more information came out, and of course, the local news are covering this very closely, right? They're not treetopping. They're not parachuting in. They're on the scene. They're taking witnesses' statements. They're talking to all the people involved. And they're reporting, basically from the jump, guys, that there's more to this story than is being covered by, you know, all of these things who are saying T's and P's for Mark Sanchez. And I think it's just a good reminder of, like, let the news develop. Let the information get out. You don't have to be the first to react to something. You don't always have to have an opinion on the most salacious information that is out there. Because there were a lot of people who then had to sort of, you know, beep, beep, beep their truck backwards and retract some of the things that they had put out there, Gabe.
Yeah, and there's like graphic videos that have been put out. I don't know who got a hold of some of the security cam footage that was eventually released. But obviously all not very good stuff.
But the other person is in the hospital as well, right?
So he has significant injuries. I don't know if that gentleman is still in the hospital, if he's been released from the hospital. The best I've seen of all the reporting is that he has significant injuries.
Crazy story.
Just a wild one. And then Brady Quinn stepping in after, I'm assuming, doing big noon game on Saturday for Fox, swinging over, and then, I mean, good for him to be able to do that on 24 hours notice, essentially. Like, hey, man, you're going to go in there and you're going to call the Colts game.
Yeah, they need someone because Mark Sanchez was in the hospital.
And then in jail.
And then arrested.
We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We've got Rob Domofsky coming up next, talking about the Green and Gold, who are now over their bye week and headed into their game against the Bengals. He is Rob Domofsky. We are lucky enough to have him joining us each and every Monday during the football season. Good morning, Rob. How you doing today, man? Oh, I see him. Oh, he's pulling a Shedeur Sanders on us is what he's doing. His lips are moving, but there's no sound.
Can you not hear me?
Now
we got you.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't doing my mime.
Although I think the Shedeur Sanders was a pretty good little quick pop there, if I do say so myself.
Pretty good.
Let's get to the Green and Gold. What has surprised you most about this Packers season so far, Rob?
Just how quickly it changed after the first 2 weeks to what they were the next 2 weeks. Like, usually, you know, teams are relatively consistent. Yeah, you'll have a stinker here and there. But they looked so good in so many facets the first 2 weeks. And then, you know, now we have all these questions about their special teams, about their defense, about their run game. So I do think it's been a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde thing, after a month of the season. But, like, it's so early, Jen. Like, there's so much that you think a football team's going to be in September and October. And then when you get to November, December, January, they're totally different. So I don't know that it's worth sitting here making any grand proclamations. But I do think it's been odd how different they played the last 2 weeks as opposed to the first two.
Rob, is Jordan Love playing better than we're giving him credit for? Because his numbers are pretty good in a lot of categories. He's top 10, top 3.
Yeah, it's interesting, Julia, you say that, because I was surprised when I looked over the bye week how good his, like, pass, I think he's like number 2 in passer rating.
Yeah.
Like, he's really high in a lot of QBR stuff, and he hasn't turned it over very much, although the two turnovers that he has had were really, really costly because of where they were on the field. Both of his turnovers were backed up, and last year he only had, I think, 3 turnovers all season when inside his own 30, and now he's got 2 of them in 4 games. So I do think that's a problem. Now, the fumble, you could say, is Rasheed Walker's fault for getting beat, maybe, and Matt LaFleur's fault for making a dumb decision from a play calling and game management standpoint, but it's still a turnover. He is probably playing better than I had given him credit for and realized, because his numbers are really good. And he's been moving around. Like, that's to me, I guess the best thing is that he's shown that mobility that he didn't really have last year. Mm-hmm.
Christian Watson, Colin Oliver, John Williams, Marshawn Lloyd, Jacob Monk, all eligible to start to return to practice this week. Of the 5, do we see one, any? Who do you think returns this week?
Yeah, we'll be on the practice field in an hour and a half, Gabe, and I can't wait to see. I asked about Christian Watson when we last had Matt LaFleur on, what was that, last week, Tuesday, and he said that that's been in discussions about whether he will practice this week or not. I do think that it's going to be soon. If it's not this week with Watson, it'll be next week very soon. Now, he's not going to play, though. Like, that's, I think, what people need to realize, that just because the practice window opens on him, and I'm, in fact, I have in my notes here today, I just started going back through, and I've just started the project. I want to find out how many weeks most guys practice when they return before they actually play in a game. But I don't think, you know, I don't think he plays before, you know, probably the end of the month at the earliest. Marshawn Lloyd seems like he's pretty close, if not ready to go. Colin Oliver, we have no idea. Like, I mean, he just hasn't practiced at all. So we, you know, I've sort of written him off a little bit this year. Now, maybe he ends up as a guy who late in the year in December, you know, returns. Like, was it the Super Bowl year? Didn't James Starks not do anything until like right around Thanksgiving or even later?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden gave him a boost down the stretch. So maybe Colin Oliver fits into that. Those are the guys that I think can help them the most. Jacob Monk, I'm not sure how much he helps, even if he comes back, unless they just have more massive injuries on the offensive line. But to me, the ones that I'm watching are Christian Watson and Marshawn Lloyd, because I think both those guys can really help this team right away, or whenever right away is for them.
Rob Domofsky hanging out with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, as he does each and every Monday during the football season. We all know that Micah Parsons was Pro Football Focus's highest graded player for week four, which is obviously what we were hoping you would get from Micah Parsons. Yeah. And yet, the defense still didn't feel like it was the high-level defense that we saw early this season. Where's the disconnect there, Rob? Explain the disconnect to me, because we thought that Micah Parsons performing at a high level would somehow lift all crafts, right? And that Lucas Van Ness would play better, and Rashawn Gary would play better, and the linebackers would play better, and it would benefit the defensive backs as well. So where's the disconnect?
Well, I think it did until last game. Like, right? I mean, I think even after Cleveland, I think people were feeling pretty good about the defense. I mean, they give up 13 points in that game?
Correct.
So I don't think that it's necessarily like an epidemic. I think they had one game where you're starting to question those things that you asked about, and I think that's, you know, rightly so. Maybe Jeff Hafley had a bad game, and that trickled down, because they certainly didn't use Edgerrin Cooper and Quay Walker like they had the previous three games. Like, we didn't see hardly any of those drops and pressures and deceptions and things like that. Maybe they were afraid to do it against Dak. I don't know why they would be, but maybe they were. So to me, I think, you know, that's where I'd like to see where this thing goes. Because I think for 3 weeks, we felt pretty good about the impact that Parsons had made and the defense as a whole. You know, it is interesting because, you know, live, I did not think Micah Parsons made that great of an impact. And then you go back and watch it, and yeah, he was around the quarterback a lot, but it didn't seem to bother Dak. Like, maybe Dak was just on his game and was really, really good, because the pressures that they had, I mean, he was almost perfect. I think he was 8 for 11 or 9 for 12 when pressured. The only time that they got him was the sort of fake sack in overtime, which is more of a running play anyway. It wasn't like they didn't get there. I just think that Dak Prescott played an outstanding game and picked him apart.
Rob, you think Josh Jacobs is frustrated?
You know, if he is, Chewy, he hasn't shown it. We've only been around him for like a year and a month in terms of, you know, football game time. And this guy is like, he's the ultimate pro, man. Like, I've never seen him complain. I've never seen him criticize anybody. He lifts up those around him. But if I were him and the offensive line, you know, was all a mess as it has been with injuries and guys moving around, sure, how could you not be? And I wonder if privately he is, but publicly he has not said anything that would indicate that. I do think that, you know, they started to show a little bit of runability. Now, Dallas's defense is terrible and, you know, is terrible. So I don't know how much we can put into that. But I don't know that I've ever seen, Chewy, through a month of the season, four different guys play right tackle. Like, I haven't seen that. Like, and I don't know how, you know, I don't know how you account for that or how you handle that. But that's I don't know that I've ever seen that. And that being the case, that's just one position. Left guard's been a little bit of a moving target. Right guard's had a little bit of rotation. So I'm not sure, you know, until they get that shored up, what you can do.
Rob, last week Jeremy Fowler had a little report as he was dumping out his notebook for a piece over at ESPN.com about how the Packers had cursory talks with Romeo Dobbs about a contract extension. Yeah. If Romeo was a free agent today, what kind of contracts would he expect to get on the open market?
That's a great question, Gabe, because the receiver market is interesting because the true number ones break the bank, right? And everybody else is sort of a mid, you know, it's sort of a, you want 8 to 10 to $12 million range. And I don't know what Romeo thinks of himself in terms of what he thinks his value is. My guess, it's always higher than what the team thinks of you, right? I mean, that's just the way it goes. But if Christian Watson got, what, 13 million on a one, on a 1 year, I think it's really 11 when I looked at the contract. It's more 11 than 13, based on what the real money actually is. But, you know, look, I saw the report by Jeremy, and I'm sure they maybe have had some feeling out about where, you know, Dobbs might be in terms of his expectations and what a starting point is. But I still say I think it's less than 50-50 that they do a long-term deal with Romeo. They've got too many guys that they've got to do. But, look, if Romeo keeps playing the way he did last week, then maybe he is a $20 million a year receiver.
Ah. Is he a two, Rob, though? Because we did we compare him to James Jones.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously there were better players.
I think that's a very fair. Good comparison. I think what everybody wanted to compare him to was Greg Jennings, you know, back when it was, and I don't think he is. I think you're probably right on that, but I mean,
the market is what it is, I guess. I mean,
he's on pace for a career high 761 yards, Rob. Like that's what it comes down to me. Like that's fine, and you could play in the league for a while putting up those types of numbers, but I don't know if I necessarily pay for that.
Yeah, you have to get down to I'm just looking at the numbers here. Like Jerry Jeudy makes $17.5 million, and he's probably 15th on the list of APY, right? Like. Mm-hmm. The here's the guys in the $13 million range. Darnell Mooney, Rashad Bateman, Darius Slayton, Travis Hunter, Christian Watson, Jacoby Myers, Tutu Atwell. He's at $10 million. Like those, is he as good as those guys? Probably.
Yeah, he's in the ballpark.
But then you take a big step up, from there to you know, Christian Kirk is at 18, Jerry Jeudy 17.5, Cooper Rush 15. Then you go the other way. Stephon Diggs is 21. Devontae Adams, Chris Goodwin, Calvin Ridley, Cortland Sutton are all in the 22, 23.
He's not there. Those are not his peers.
Yeah. So where it slots in, does he slot in at, 12, 13 million? Would you do it for that?
No.
How many 1,000-yard seasons has Rashad Bateman or Darnell Mooney have? I don't know if they had any. I don't know.
Bateman has not. I think he got close last year. I think he had at least a 900-yard season.
Okay. So that's sort of what you're looking at, I think, and maybe add 10% because it goes up every year, right? That's just the way it is. So I don't know. Would you want him back for 4 years and $48 million?
Yeah, so I guess Bateman would be the guy. Bateman, career high, 756 yards last year.
So that's a pretty good comparison.
That's good comp.
And that's what agents like to do, right? They like to take, I know an agent who does this, who actually not an agent, but he is employed by an agency, and his job is to find comps to their clients and try to present those deals. And it's a really, and I talk to this guy a lot. I'm going to have to ask him what he thinks of Dobbs, but. I think those are the comps. I think Bateman's a really good comp.
What's Bateman's number again?
He is at 12, $0.25 million average. That's APY.
I guess I lean towards no, just because they have so many other guys. Like when Christian Watson comes back, and they already invested two high draft picks at that wide receiver position this year, with not just Golden, but also Savion Williams. It seems like they've been preparing for his departure, and then they decided, oh, we're going to give Christian Watson a one-year extension. And if you extend Dobbs, does that prevent you from extending Wicks or Reed?
Or Reed, yeah, and that's exactly right. Like, you know, I remember last year talking to passing game coordinator Jason Vrabel, and, you know, he's like, here's how we'll find out who our number ones are. It's who gets the second contracts, right? Like that's sort of how. Now the interesting thing on Bateman's deal, just looking at it closer, his signing bonus was only $8 million. But total guarantee of 18. Now we know the Packers don't structure deals that way. The Packers structure deals where the only guarantee is the signing bonus, whereas Baltimore did it differently. They guaranteed his base salary for 26 and 27. This deal was done in June of this year. So a little different structure. The Packers don't do it this typically, you know, do it with other than quarterback and Micah Parsons. They typically just do the guarantees or the signing bonus. This was a much smaller signing bonus, which is an interesting way to do it, I guess.
Really good insight, really good perspective. Last thing before we let you go, Rob, because this was obviously a big talking point during the bye week. Is there anything to Matt LaFleur moving on from Rich Bisaccia, or is that just a pipe dream by some fans who are frustrated with how terrible special teams has been consistently for this squad?
Yeah, I mean, nothing in Matt LaFleur's history would tell you that he's going to make an in-season coaching change. I mean, if he didn't do it with Joe Barry in his last year, he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it with Rich Bisaccia. Now, the interesting thing is in Joe Barry's last year, they actually they sort of turned it around and really finished pretty well. And there was some thought that Joe Barry might have saved his job in that little run late in the year. In what was that, 23?
Mm-hmm.
I think if they were going to make a change, we would have heard about it by now. We would have known it. I fully expect to see Rich Bisaccia on the practice field when I get there in a little bit. But I'll certainly let you know and let the world know if he's not.
Rob, we always appreciate you spending some time with us on Monday mornings. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a great week, guys.
He's Rob Domofsky. He will, of course, report back if there is any news to report from Packers practice today. We're Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We'll take a break. Be right back after this.
A weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a fan favorite and Bucks legend. Tune in to Hear District, Marcus Johnson at Bucks Plus Audio Production. Marcus and his son Chris, a 1995 UCLA hoops champ himself, talk about everything happening in the Bucks world, and they're joined by some of the biggest names in basketball. Plus, they'll answer your questions too. Stay on the beat of the Bucks. Find Hear District now, bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
TBD.
No, not how this
works. Attaboy!
That's not how any of this
works.
That's
how you make content.
What do you mean? That's how it works for him.
What's TBD mean?
To be determined.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
To be dumb. Did you hear him say to be dumb?
To be dumb. Did Joshy say that?
He did.
On 94.5 ESPN.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. October 10th is World Mental Health Day, and this year we are saying thank you, therapists. BetterHelp therapists work according to strict code of conduct. They are fully licensed in the United States, and they do a great job of the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. You just fill out a short questionnaire. It helps identify your needs and your preferences, and then they use their dozen-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate to help you get the right therapist the right time. But if you aren't happy and you need to switch, they make it easy to do that too. World Mental Health Day, we are celebrating the therapists who have helped millions of people take a step forward, and you could be next. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can start that journey right now. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/timeout. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/timeout. Back here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. If you missed my reveal of the Chewy, C-H-E-W-E-Y, sweatshirt. Wait, Super Chewy is what it says, right? I can't see it. Does it say Super Chewy? Is that what it says?
Yeah, it says Super Chewy.
Does he have a cape on? Is there a cape?
No. He's ripping the shirt off like he is Superman.
Yeah.
They got good hair.
Yeah, they did a good job. They made you look very handsome, Chew. On this super sweatshirt that I'm wearing.
Please don't ever wear that again.
I got to imagine that sweatshirt came out after it was revealed that you and Brett had your Superman tattoos, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, it had to be, because when we got those, it was 93, and we weren't breaking out yet.
Well, and so what you're saying is nobody was making a Super Chewy sweatshirt in 1993? Yeah.
Did you know Brett, his is remarkably higher because he didn't want his mother to see that he had a tattoo, even though he has another tattoo.
Would she be able to see that one?
I would hope not.
We'll see then. That's what, kind of what I figured. Yeah. The whole, even though he has another one, was just thrown in there to make sure that people know that he has one in one of those areas.
And again, because you guys weren't going to think this out, because I remember that being a story, like later, like even though it was hidden, like, you guys got tattoos together, which makes me think that you ratted him out when you were approached about, hey, what's up with the Superman tattoo? Oh, yeah, me and Brett got him together.
We did, but the other tattoo, when a certain text came out, I went, yep. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about, but you know what? That's just
Gabe, do you know?
I know the Crocs text is what he's describing, but I don't know how the tattoo and those correlate.
Because you shower naked, Josh. You don't shower with clothes on. Are we talking about the same thing, the New York text?
I have chosen to not remember anything about that text other than the Crocs. I have not studied it.
They were orange, right? Hey, listen, Wildy and Tosh are going to talk about your Packers and your Brewers Game 2 of the NLDS tonight at AmFam Field. We will be there, and we'll be recapping it all tomorrow morning right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.